The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
And welcome to another edition of Boom Reacts Wrestling Unwrapped Reacts. And tonight, Boom Reacts to WWE Extreme Rules, the one that year that the WWE goes extreme. I am your host, the man who's about to make one hell of a decision yesterday in the freshly haircutting Patrick Cutsaw. And joining me, as always, the guy who, if he seriously doesn't start winning more often, he's going to be stuck with a dong and ball and his Great Balls of Fire's logo as his cover photo next month, Harry Bronhurst.
On behalf of wrestling fans everywhere, I would just like to say that logo for the pay-per-view made me sing Testies, Testies, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, as soon as, here's the thing. The promo that they showed for the pay-per-view, I liked. Really liked. The logo, the actual logo that's being used, it looks like a dong and balls. I am seeing a ball of fire, but that streak of fire behind them makes it look like.
Yeah, apparently someone got the clap and nobody let them know. All right, anywho, we got a pay-per-view to review, Patrick.
That's right, we do. Before we get to that pay-per-view in July, we've got tonight's pay-per-view. Six matches on the main show, plus your kickoff show, which I think wasn't announced until tonight.
Yeah, it was announced earlier today.
So, should we just get right to it?
Well, I think we have a little bit of housekeeping to do before we actually start the review, so why don't you go ahead and do it?
As Harry did mention, we are a presentation of the W2M Network for more information about not only what we do, but the W2M drives football to the max, guys, the fantasy football to the max, guys, soccer to the max, guys, and all the other stuff as part of the network, along with previews of the one that we had for tonight. And is it actually up? Or is it not up yet?
Yes, our review is up.
Okay, and for miraculously, our throwback written reviews to our previous episodes, including the finally freshly printed Royal Rumble 1992 review, be sure to check out the website at W2Mnet.com. And
in addition, we are sponsored by the Madhouse Toy Chest, stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you are a fan of anything wrestling, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, and more, you can find it inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest. Patrick, it turns out we're actually doing a pay-per-view next week for Wrestling Unwrapped, and the DVD for the pay-per-view that we're doing next week, Jason actually has. You can get your copy of ECW One Night Stand 2005 on DVD inside of the Madhouse Toy Chest right now. Watch along so you can listen into next week's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped.
Except there will be one part of that show where I will say, screw the DVD and screw the network version.
Okay, but let's focus on selling sponsored DVDs, Patrick. Come on now.
Sorry, but if there was ever a time that the WWE
Buy the DVD, people. End of story.
JBL's commentary on the DVD is great as you listen to him just get hammered. But seriously, buy the rights to this. Anyway. So, shall we? Real quick. And yes, I did watch the pre-show, so we can actually talk about all matches that actually occurred tonight, despite the fact that this is about 2 hours and 45 minutes to the pay-per-view. So why don't we get right to it, starting things off on the kickoff show. The Titus Brand presents Apollo Crews, and he's facing the Great Muta, Colisto.
Actually, pretty sure that's Drago from Lucha Underground's mask, but sure, we'll go with that.
I've seen Luna masks that look like that too. So I know what I'm talking about. But the very first vibe I got was Muda.
Nope, I'm going with Drago. We can also go with Kane circa 2002 if you'd like.
No one wants to call Kane circa 2002.
Well, at least my profile pick is Nicole Bass and not Katie Vick. Anywho, moving on.
Hey, you brought that up. I wasn't going to go that far.
All right, anyway. Moving on. I actually really enjoyed the pre-show match here. I was talking to fellow Yes Wrestling member, and I know we're a W2M presentation, but W2M and Yes are kind of sibling groups. I was talking to fellow Yes member Greg DeMarco about this, and one of the things that DeMarco said was that, given all of its build, I'm sure it deserved a minute, because I pointed out that this match was really good and deserved better than the pre-show. I said it. He said it deserved to be main event. I said it deserved to be main show. And given a couple of the matches that we ended up seeing on tonight's main show, I think my concerns and my statement were validated based on what we were to have to come on the actual pay-per-view itself.
Yeah, 5 out of 6 weren't bad.
4 out of 6, but we'll talk about that once we get to it. Your thoughts on the match? Your thoughts on the match itself, the pre-show match between Cruz and, for the record, that should be his officially billed name from JoJo from now on. I think that would work for him. The Titus Brand presents Apollo Cruz.
That is way too long.
And JoJo could make it work.
I don't know if it was something that Trout wanted. Trout was really behind this, and it seemed like both of us were really trying, because some of the moves that Kalisto was pulling off, like the springboard, the springboard triple jump, flipping seated center that he hits from the ring to the floor. That was impressive as hell. I thought that Kalisto and Apollo Crews put on a hell of a match. Yeah, absolutely. It's better than some match on the main show. I'm kind of surprised that Kalisto picked up the win. I thought that Titus would have cheated to help Apollo win. But, you know, I have to wonder how much longer is this really going to go with Apollo Crews and the Titus brand. You know, it's just, I don't like how Lonzo Ball is doing things with his son and his son's basketball career, and guess what? I don't like the wrestling version of it either.
I actually think it gives Apollo some personality, so I'm okay with it. As long as we use this as a reason to keep Titus O'Neil out of the ring, I think I'll be even more okay with it in the grand scheme of things as well, because I think Titus makes for an excellent mouthpiece, but he is a god-awful wrestler.
There is one extra thing I have to mention. Mr. Sam Roberts, shooting star, not a 450. Apollo, you're shooting star, you idiot, not shooting 450. You
yeah, because...
Not forwards.
Because you've never screwed up a move call before or anything. I'm more willing to give Sam Roberts the benefit of a doubt since he's not a regular announcer.
But he's a wrestling fan. He should know the damn difference. Or he's supposedly a wrestling fan. Who knows?
Or maybe it was what he was told to call it. Even if Michael Cole did call it correctly with standing shooting start.
Sam Roberts making Michael Cole look adequate.
I actually thought Michael Cole had a really good night tonight, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, I mean, it does kind of play into it, because I thought he actually was pretty good, too.
Well, okay, then. All right, so that's your pre-show match, Apollo Crews and Kalisto. All right, so I'm actually going to start doing ratings during the course of these shows, since we're not doing ratings for the website for these. I put this solidly around 3.5 stars.
That's your thing.
Okay, fine. You don't have to if you don't want to.
I would probably give it a 3. I thought it was actually a very enjoyable match.
I hope these two continue feuding and they actually find their way onto the pay-per-view in 5 weeks, because I think that these two, with the chemistry that they've displayed in both the Raw match as well as the chemistry they had tonight on the pre-show, they deserve a main event. They deserve a main pay-per-view, blow off to their mini feud they have going on here. Not to mention, I think Apollo down the road would make for an excellent challenger for our opening contest, the winner of our opening contest, Intercontinental title game. You know what? You can crap on this guy all you want to. Frankly, top to bottom, the last calendar year, to me, The Miz has been hands down the best performer in the WWE.
Hell, I'm shocked he actually caught somebody today.
Oh, God, get off that, will you?
Is an extreme rules match. An extreme enforcement of the rules match. Dean Ambrose defends the Intercontinental Championship against the Miz. And if Dean Ambrose is disqualified, he loses the Intercontinental Championship, so half of the champion advantage is gone. For some reason, they wanted to say all of the champion advantage is gone, and then my people ended up mentioning the fact that, but still go with Ambrose fans.
Dude, your phone is garbage right now. I can barely hear you. I'm just being honest.
Try and move to another spot.
I apologize to our listeners at home right now. For those of you who haven't listened to the show regularly, Patrick conducts these while he's in his garage over at his apartment, over at his house, in order to not disturb his family. So,
I'm in the backyard.
It is a nice night, probably. I mean, it was like 65, 70 degrees here in Ohio, so I'd imagine it's probably similar in Chicago.
Are you kidding me? It was 88 today.
Jesus. Well, the good news is I can actually hear you now, so we can talk about this IC title match.
I don't want to.
You know, well, that's because you hate Miz, you biased jackass. Anyways.
Just call me Renee Young. Well, maybe not.
I don't think you're as biased as Renee Young. But that, in fairness, you're not sleeping with either participant either. That I know of. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Anyways, back to the match itself. Something about Miz brings out the best in Ambrose, I think. I think that Ambrose has his best matches against Miz. The two title change matches were really good. The match on Raw that led to this match where Ambrose kicked him in the junk was really good, and I think tonight's match was really good as well. Step outside of your Miz hate for 1 second and imagine that it was a different competitor having the exact same match against Ambrose tonight that Miz did. What would you say about it?
Adequate.
Well, that's a step above most of Ambrose's performances lately.
The match wasn't terrible. Seriously, 7 points? I would have thought that, this is going to sound biased, but I actually do need it. I would have thought that this would have actually gone, even sweeter than the stuff that he was pulling off. You could kind of see the Maurice stuff coming, a mile away. I'm surprised they didn't try doing it sooner. But because of how it kind of plays into the finish anyway, but it was attempt to get disqualified, cleanly. That part was a little weird to me. So, it ends up technically being a clean win, but it's not. I did find that part weird. Other than that, not terrible. I do think that when Ambrose gets a damn, Ambrose can be damn good. And lately, it seems like over the past, gosh, year and a half almost. It seems like Ambrose is starting to not give a damn, but it felt like he did tonight. And it ended up being, you know, a pretty good match. So, I give Ambrose
I think Ambrose shows up more motivated for pay-per-view matches than he does for a lot of the TV matches. And, I mean, I guess in a sense I can't blame him for that, but at the same time, when you represent the IC title, you're supposed to bring your best every night of the week, regardless of if you're on television or if you're on pay-per-view or if you're at a house show in front of 50 people. And one of the things that I think we
Wrong
can
company.
Say here... And one of the things that I think we can say here is that in all honesty here, and as much as you may dislike the guy, Miz has been bringing it night in and night out for the last year.
Yes, there is one thing. That, like, there is one thing I'll give a legitimate, I'm going to give a legitimate, non-biased reasoning behind it. Everyone keeps talking about how this is, you know, on the stick and cutting all these amazing promos. I don't see that because it seems like a lot of his promos are just being damn talking over and doing nothing arguing. Sure, he brings up valid points. Like, during Raw Talk tonight, he brought up valid points, like Ambrose only defending the belt, like, you know, a small handful of times while he was, you know, Intercontinental Champion. Fair to say, I don't think he defended it on Raw. I think every time he defended it, it was at a pay-per-view. But it always ends up just being him arguing with whoever the host is. In this case, Renee Young. Obviously, Renee has a box. But I don't see the magic that everyone else sees. Okay?
I still think you're letting your hatred of Miz cloud your opinion as far as his ring work and as far as his character work goes.
You can't tell me that entire promo on Raw Talk was not him just talking over it.
I think that was Miz making a point at the expense of Renee Young, which entirely fits his character. I had no issue with it. Renee is supposed to be a quote-unquote broadcast journalist. She's supposed to
buy it.
Well, yeah, but Renee's no Bobby, and I think we can both agree to that. And Bobby Heenan's reason for bias and Renee Young's reason for bias are two completely different things. Heenan was biased for money, which is the best reason to be biased.
Moving on. I was kind of surprised it was this early, the mixed tag match. By the way, no purple rope, thank you. I found that weird, though.
Well, that's because the purple ropes are reserved exclusively for cruiserweight only matches.
Okay, this was almost entirely 205 Live. The only thing not 205 Live was Sasso. This was a 205 Live match.
I mean, Alicia's technically on Raw.
You sure?
Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see Alicia in the ring at all, but it's because I'm worried she's going to cripple somebody with that scissor kick of hers.
Oh, we'll talk about someone hitting someone in the back and almost crippling them later.
Hey, we want some bay. Oh, wait, never mind. Moving on.
No,
moving on.
I'm not even talking about that one.
Well, that one looked nasty, too, but we'll get to that as well.
You will bow to the... All right, later on. Anyway, Sasha Banks, the hometown boy, Rich Swan, facing off against Noah Dar and Alicia Fox. When I made my predictions earlier in the week, I thought I completely whiffed on the fact that Swan's from Baltimore. Completely whiffed on that. And I took them to win the match. And then I realized, because I'm wondering, why is Swan getting such a huge pop? And I'm like, oh, crap, Baltimore. And then I'm like, oh, crap, they're going to lose. Lo and behold, boy, was I glad I took the prediction that I did. Swan and Sasha Banks end up picking up the win, and the male side of the match was pretty good. The female side was pretty good at times. Eventually, it just broke down to a catfight spot because Sure.
Well, that's basically all Alicia Fox is really capable of. Well, they don't trust her to do anything resembling competent wrestling.
The thing is, she has three moves. Northern Light Suplex, the Scissors Kick, and the Catfight. And the Decky in the Nose with the Tissue Box. So four moves.
Ask Nia Jax about that one. I hear it's devastating.
Shocked the hell out of her. Anyway, I didn't think the match really was that bad. I was surprised to hell that Swan and Banks did end up picking up the victory, and my God, Seth Rollins wishes his Phoenix Splash was as pretty as Rich Swan's, because Rich Swan has one of the prettiest Phoenix Splashes ever.
Oh, no doubt in my mind about that one. Completely agree. Swan's Phoenix Splash is a thing of beauty.
I was actually surprised that Rollins went for the Phoenix Splash.
Because of him being in Baltimore and it being Rich's move?
Well, not so much the Baltimore part, but it's Rich's move.
Let's be honest here, though. They're on different places on the card. Like, for as much as we'd like to believe that the WWE may see something eventually at some point in somebody like Rich Swann going forward, Seth Rollins is on an entirely different playing field than a guy like Rich Swann is right now.
Yeah, fair enough. What'd you think of the match?
Was what it was? Was what I expected? Does that answer your question? By which I mean my expectations going into it were low and they did not disappoint.
So you didn't like it?
I was indifferent, which I think might be worse than not liking it. If that makes sense. I had no feeling one way or another towards it, and I think that might be worse than not liking it, because not liking it means I actually would have cared one way or the other.
Well, I don't know.
A lot of it has to do with the fact that, quite frankly, I have no more interest in the Noam Dar Alicia Fox pairing, because they've overdone it to death and back. The original point of the pairing was Cedric Alexander, who ended up missing significant time due to injury. Granted, not Cedric's fault, but at that point, you should have just had them fade away and just have Alicia be a background character there. She's become part of the focal point of 205 Live, which I think is part of the reason the show is tanking.
You're really saying that the show is tanking because of her?
Well, not her specifically, but I think that that's playing a factor in it. Would you not agree with that?
I would venture to disagree there, but that's me.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm entitled to mine, so therefore we'll agree to disagree with this one, and we'll move on. The match itself I put probably around 2 stars.
I would actually say 3 again. I honestly didn't think this was that big of a match.
Agree to disagree on this one. I was not as invested in this match as I was in most of the other matches on the card. There was one other match that I felt was a very strong swing and a miss, and we're going to cover that next.
Yeah, our next contest, the Vince Russo Special. Kendall Stick on a pole. Mighty short pole, I might add. Gee, I wonder why. Being versus the Bongo champion, Alexa.
No, I mean, when one of the participants is only 5 feet even and the other one's not much taller, there's only so much you can do, Patrick. I'm just tossing it out there.
I don't know. I mean, Bailey's got some fighting.
Yeah, when Bailey's the tall person in the match, it's probably a problem. Is Bailey taller than you? I think you guys might be the same height.
She's got me by an inch. I'm 5'5", she's 5'6". So she's got a half a foot on her legs. So
she is not 5 foot six. That is a bold faced lie.
I'll have to go back and look for the pictures that I keep with her. She's taller than me. Anyway.
Okay, she's also in wrestling boots probably taking those pictures. Regardless, moving on.
After the show at the after party. Anyway, moving on. Who in the hell did Bailey piss off?
I was wondering that same thing watching that show myself. Yikes. She's clearly in a doghouse. She got almost nothing in this match. Now, I get the character work involved here. Like, I do. I really do. I get it. I understand it. I don't have to like it to understand it, but I understand it. But come on, guys. You can't constantly book Bailey like an idiot and then expect fans to still be cheering for her. You notice there's a significant portion of the fans that have turned on Bailey, right? Which is something that which is something that I would have never thought possible back in her NXT days.
I'll put it this way. I saw a post on Facebook earlier tonight. Unfortunately, I can't let me think of who posted it or where it was posted. I don't see the group. And the question was asked, can Bailey be added to the list of failed NXT call-ups? I would actually say no, but she's got to find something to springboard back from this absolutely undisputed, one-sided view. And if you're going to disagree with that, I'd love to hear your argument on that, because Bailey got nothing, absolutely nothing.
I wouldn't say nothing, but she definitely didn't get a lot. In fairness, the match was only like that.
How are you not hearing me? I have to move.
I don't know what it is. Your phone is fading in and out tonight. But anyways, back to the conversation we're having at hand in regards to this match here. She had very, very little offense, and she did not get one swing of the kendo stick, which I think was a mistake, because I think with the way that the build-up had gone with Alexa controlling the entire build on Raw, it would have behooved them to give Bailey at least something in regards to some kind of physical revenge on Alexa, even if she didn't win the match. At no point did I think Bailey was winning this match anyway. I always had Alexa winning this. I said as much in the predictions on the W2M net page. But you got to give Bailey something that her fans can get behind her for. And there's a significant backlash coming against her. And the way that she was booked in this match is going to do nothing to help it. I get that they're going for plucky babyface with Bailey, but what they're coming across with Bailey is complete and total buffoon.
You can still be a happy-go-lucky good guy and not look like an idiot. But, hell, that's what Apollo Crews was originally. He was a happy-go-lucky, lightning baby. But, I'm happy to be here. You know, I don't like it, and I have to think with the promo that Nia Jax cut on Raw, or on the pre-show, I'm guessing they're doing something with Nia Jax and Alexa going into the July pay-per-view. And maybe we're not going to get the big money match that other people were thinking we were going to get is Sasha versus Bayley. Because that's the furthest thing from what we've got right now.
I would argue that I think that the women's title match for the next pay-per-view is probably going to be Alexa Bliss versus Sasha Banks, but that's just me.
I insisted that Alexa promised her a match.
I still don't think they're going to do heel versus heel at Great Balls of Fire. I stand by my prediction. I could be wrong, but I stand by my prediction. I think it's going to be Alexa and Sasha for Great Balls of Fire. I can't believe I have to say that as the name of a paper. Whatever. Moving on. The match itself, I put probably around a star.
One and a half, and I'm being nice.
Yeah, I'm not. Pardon it, but most of it's because they book Bailey like a moron.
Yep. All right. Speaking of being booked like a moron, our next contest
could not disagree more.
I'll get to my point. For the Raw Tag Team titles, in a steel cage match, the only way to win is by both of them escaping the cage and it's winking nudge-nudge. The Hardy Boys defend against the Cake Brothers, Sheamus and Cesaro.
That would be actually Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam for Sheamus and Cesaro. And if you haven't seen the picture, it's on my Facebook page, and frankly, it's hilarious.
Oh, no, I haven't seen the picture, but I totally understand that. If not for another match, I would have easily called this the best match of the show.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this one as well. I thought that all four men put in a really strong performance, and I think that there was good character work involved from all four men as well.
Yeah, it was a hell of a match, and a lot of trying to get out through the door, which I found weird until the very end. And at one point, Jeff Hardy actually escapes over the top of the cage and is the first one out on the floor. So at that point, it's of course 2-on-1, Sheamus and Cesaro versus Matt Hardy. And they proceed to kind of, you know, beat the hell out of them, but Matt does hold his own. Until Jeff kind of sees it off of it and goes to fly back in and delivers a whisper in the wind to Sheamus and Cesaro. But she's so badly damaged that Joe Bad is able to get back and has to drag Jeff toward the door while Sheamus and Cesaro are trying to climb over. And Sheamus and Cesaro, their feet hit the floor just before Jeff hit the floor. So therefore, we have new Raw Tag Team Champion in Sheamus and Cesaro. I just see one thing. My God, these Jets are being selfish. And his selfishness cost them the tag team titles because he can't stay on the spotlight.
I think he looked at it more as he was coming to Matt's rescue after Matt took that big move off of the top rope with the Avalanche Air Raid Crash. White Noise, as Sheamus calls it.
I think Jeff Hardy being selfish.
Okay, and you're entitled to your opinion, but I think of it as Jeff coming to Matt's rescue after Matt got laid out with the Avalanche White Noise.
You're really not hearing the sarcasm in my voice, are you?
No, I'm not. In fairness, your phone's being a piece of crap tonight.
Lovely. No, I'm saying it sarcastically, because I have a hunch that this is what's going to turn back. Turn that heel against Jeff, and we may end up getting a few moves that, you know, if a certain lawsuit can finish time, maybe we can correct Matt Hardy.
I honestly don't know that the WWE is ever going to use the broken gimmick, and I think people that are holding on expecting it to happen are kind of setting themselves up for disappointment. And I know we've talked about the broken-hearted gimmick before here on these Woo Reacts episodes, but I honestly feel like the more and more this gets delayed, the less and less relevant it becomes. And you'll notice that a lot of the trademark broken characteristics that Matt and Jeff were working into their shticks while they were doing their entrances, while they were having their in-ring contests, while they were cutting their promos and stuff, the little things that they would slip in here and there are slowly more and more disappearing from their shtick.
Yeah, despite the fact that the crowd continues to constantly chant "Delete." And Brother Harry, I heard it at least by Brother Nero at least twice.
I'm not disagreeing that the crowds are still chanting it, but you'll notice that Matt and Jeff are both toning down the mannerisms.
I do think it kind of starts to break up the party, and that's Jeff's selfishness, but, you know, I'm surprised, but I'm not. I'm surprised that the Hardys did lose it to Sheamus and Cesaro, but at the same time, it's something that I've brought up before. The Hardys don't win steel cage matches.
That's not true. They're 1-1. They won the one against Edge and Christian. They lost the one to the Dudleys.
Okay, so they're 1-2 now. Doink.
Well, yeah, but they were 500 going into it, so saying that they don't win steel cage matches is frankly a misnomer. Now, this is obviously not counting the ones that happened on Raws or SmackDowns or everything, and I can't say that I've watched enough of the old episodes of Raw and SmackDown to be able to give you any kind of a realization of what those numbers may or may not be, at least not to this point yet. I'm in the process of going back and rewatching all the old episodes of Raw and SmackDown.
But there's also, like, singles matches and things like that. I can think of at least a couple that Jeff's lost.
I can think of a couple that Jeff has won as well, and I can think of a couple that Matt won. Matt won the cage match against Edge at Unforgiven. Jeff beat Umaga in the cage match to win the Intercontinental title. What's your point?
I don't know. I found it weird that they just had a steel cage match.
I do agree that it being a steel cage match didn't make sense to me, but at the same time, they just did a ladder match at WrestleMania, and they have a pair of ladder matches coming up in 2 weeks at Money in the Bank. I think they didn't want to take the spotlight away from those matches. Now, if I were the WWE in this particular instance, even though the pay-per-view is not until December, I would have had the Hardys ask for a tables, ladders, and chairs match.
Well, it might be a Raw pay-per-view. Don't know yet.
But yeah, well, you know, we thought Money in the Bank was going to be Raw, too, and it ended up being SmackDown. So, goodness gracious, great balls of bad booking. All right. Overall, match rating. Overall match rating, I'd say probably around 3.5, 4, somewhere in that neighborhood.
I can't go 4. 3.5. I can't okay. go 4. 3.5 for me. Very, very good match. They definitely put in the work for the match tonight.
One other spot that we didn't discuss that I wanted to ask you your thoughts on, Sheamus bro kicking the cage door into Jeff Hardy, like or dislike?
Oh.
That's not an answer to my question.
I'm okay with that. I thought it was good.
I thought it looked really cool.
I thought it would actually look a hell of a lot safer than the straight hoof and a mouth from last month.
Well, yeah, and in fairness, I think Jeff's teeth agree with that statement.
Fair enough.
All right, Cruiserweight title, Tom.
Indeed. It is a submission match. It is the King of the Cruiserweights, King Neville, defending against the greatest man that ever lived, Austin Aries. Submission match only, and by the way, Michael Cole's one mistake, no, Backlund and Hart was not a submission match when Backlund beat Brett.
Actually, it was a submission match.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. The submission match was at WrestleMania. The Survivor Series title match was a throw in the towel match. It was not a submission match because it wasn't on them to submit. It was on sensitive to throw in the towel. Suck it, Broadhurst.
Yeah, crap, you're right. It was a Talon because I think Helen was Brett's corner woman and Owen was, or Dave, who was back once again? Was it Davey Boy?
I think so. Helen threw in the towel to cost Brett the match when Owen begged her.
It might have been Neidhart then for Backlund.
I don't remember. Might have been Owen's corner, probably, you know.
Regardless, all right, back to the match itself. Okay, so you want to know what pissed me off about this match?
The ropes being
broken. The ropes being broken, the referee trying to make a count for countouts, the referee threatening to disqualify people. It is a damn submission match. No countout, no disqualification, no rope break.
As dumb as it sounds, I think rope breaks do count in submission matches, even though you can't disqualify them. I have seen submission matches that had rope breaks.
Frankly, a submission match should not have a rope break. It should not have a count-out. It should not have a disqualification. And honestly, I'm not real big on submission matches ending in KO either, but, you know, that happens.
I actually called that one. No, I didn't.
What, that it would end with a Neville KO?
Technically, it didn't. Austin Aries, although I did say that I thought Neville was going to have a dirty win. It was going to be a dirty win, and Austin Aries may not actually submit. He did, but he came close. I thought these two actually had a hell of a match. Unfortunately, the crowd just did not give a rat's ass about this match.
Yeah, they def slaughtered it, which I really didn't care for. If you were going to have the crap fest that you had with the women's title, they really should have switched places with these two matches. Because Alexa and Bayley, as we discussed earlier, was a colossal disappointment, and these two have done nothing but deliver in their three pay-per-view matches. But between the slaughtering and the finishes in those three matches, creative has done them no favors for all the hard work that they've put in.
But also, when you look at the two that are in the matches, you can understand why. And they deliver yet again with a very, very good match. Neville ends up picking up the win via the Rings of Saturn, but holy crap.
Yeah, that red arrow was a little stiff, wasn't it?
Friend of mine actually messaged me saying he thinks Aries was legit knocked out. I didn't think that, but I just looked, whenever I saw every replay, I'm like, did Neville just like land full body weight on his back? I can understand trying to make the boot look good so that it can sell your finisher, but
I think a lot of what it was too is the fact that I think that Red Arrow was supposed to directly tie into the finish, so they wanted it to look land with some impact. And I think Neville went in knees heavy with it for that very reason, and the fact that they knew it was supposed to tie directly into the finish with the applying of the Rings of Saturn and then the almost immediate tap out thereof by Aries right after the Rings of Saturn were applied.
So you have to, I think after this, you have to think Austin Aries is done. You know, he's 0-3. He's got to be done after this. Technically, he could actually have a gripe to get a fourth match.
Neville tapping on the floor with the last chancery?
Yeah, I was going to say, if this all fight plays to why they were counting countouts and disqualifications, because that way, the match has to end in the ring. Why would that matter? Well, at one point, Austin Aries had last chancery on Neville, and Neville actually taps out. So Austin should have won the match. However, as Harry mentioned, it was on the floor. So the ref says, no, you didn't win. It has to be in the ring. And we almost immediately go into the finish right after. So I could see where Aries would have a gripe to get, you know, a fourth and final shot at the title, but at the same time, you were already 0-3. So, you know, and then Rich Swann making a claim to wanting to become a two-time champion on Raw Talk. If Aries isn't done, he's damn close.
I honestly don't think it'll be Aries or Rich Swann that takes the title off of Neville, and I think we've discussed this before here on our Woo Reacts. We might have done it after Payback when I made my prediction as to who was going to be the man to take the title off of Neville. I stand by the prediction that I made before that I think the person who's going to dethrone the king will eventually be Akira Tozawa.
Oh, no, no. I'm not talking about who's going to dethrone him. I'm talking about who does he go up against next.
Next, well, on the basis of him getting the pinfall over Noem on the pay-per-view, it really wouldn't surprise me to see another return match between Neville and Rich Swann.
Neville King and Swann. Especially with Swann breaking the curse of your hometown.
Well, did they have a return match at Fastlane after Neville beat him for the belt at Royal Rumble? Did they ever do a return match at Fastlane?
Yes.
I want to say Gallagher got the title shot at Fastlane. I want to say that the Fastlane title match was Neville versus Gallagher, which means Swann may have had his return match on Raw. Either on Raw or 205, anyway. Rating. I put this one around 3.5.
I see. 4.
I don't think we can go 4 just due to the lack of crowd involvement. Unfortunately, much though I hate to admit it, I think crowd involvement in a match can help make a match even better, and mostly due to the placement on the card, the fans were pretty much sitting on their hands for this one to get ready for what they had just experienced with the arguable letdown of the Hardys dropping the tag titles and them getting ready for what was to come with the Fatal 5-Way main event that we're about to discuss next.
By the way, yes, Gallagher at Fastlane.
I was almost certain of that.
Yeah, because everyone was worried about them hot potatoing the title yet again. It does have the longest reign out of 4. That's kind of sad. Anyway. So, yes, it is main event time for 6-day final match of the show. You know, I can't say I'm really that upset with 6-match cards. You know, it keeps it a little shorter, and I'm okay with it.
I think it was a missed opportunity. You could have given a little bit more focus to all 6 matches rather than cutting the women so short. At the same time, maybe a message to whomever the message may have been to. I'm not entirely sure who that is, but yeah. If there is anybody who could benefit from a switching of brands right about now, it would be Bayley.
Really want to almost put all of the 4 horsewomen on one show?
Well, we had 3 of the 4. Sorry, I had a situation over here. I almost tripped over a cat. Well, we had 3 of the 4 on Raw. Why not?
True.
Okay,
however,
then in that
before...
case, well, in that case, trade Bayley for Becky.
Well, I don't know that I'd do that, considering that you're trying to play it apart here.
All right, main event time. Let's get to it.
Speaking of 5 people in 1 match, no. Not Women's Money is a big match. That's 2 weeks from now. It is our main event. It is a Fatal 5-Way Extreme Rules match. Even though the rules don't change between a Fatal 5-Way match and an Extreme Rules match. With the winner becoming number 1 contender for the Universal Championship at a later date. Now we actually know that, yes, it is Patrick on the fire, and Kurt Angle was the unfortunate SOB that had to be the first one to say it.
And Kurt Angle clearly, clear as day on the pre-show, did not want to utter that phrase.
great balls of fire.
balls of fire, great balls of fire. Honestly, balls of fire... Well, that actually sounds like Kurt after a night at that other promotion he used to work for when he was still shagging that Rock of Khan chick. All right, moving on.
Anyway, Bray Wyatt versus Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins versus Samoa Joe versus Big Balor. And like I said, the winner gets the main event spot at the July pay-per-view. I'm done saying it. Great for the first 5 or so minutes. Great for the last 10 or so minutes. But that middle was boring as hell.
Disagree. Really enjoyed this match. Really dug the kind of collusion between Bray Wyatt and Samoa Joe leading into Bray turning on Joe and Joe confronting him about it afterwards. Really enjoyed everybody getting their own individual shine spots there, so that way they had everybody look, well, pardon the phrasing here, look strong. Seems like the only one the crowd didn't really positively react to on a full basis was Roman, which should kind of tell the company all they really need to know. But at the same time, not entirely surprising that that's still the way they wanted to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one that kind of had the biggest, most dominating portion of the match, which, by the way, Buddy Line messaged me, and I had to get a chuckle, where you had Samoa Joe trying to Samoa drop the Samoa Joe, but then a Samoa Joe reverses the Samoa drop on Samoa Joe.
Too many Samoa Josephs.
Well, that's what happens when you have Samoa Joe versus a Samoan Joe.
Actually, they're both Samoan Josephs, too.
Yeah, but easier to differentiate how I say it. Anyway, how long do you think the Rollins is going to be out with an injury?
Try that again?
How long do you think Seth Rollins will be out with an injury?
I think that was actually a really good sell job. I don't think his knee's actually hurt.
It wasn't his knee. It wasn't his knee that he was reacting to, and it wasn't his knee that hit the edge of the table. It was his ankle. He was not moving lightly on his knee. He was moving lightly on that ankle. That ankle caused Horn from the table when he did the frog splash off the top rope through the announce table and ringside on Bray Wyatt.
I think it was a sell job because he was trading moves back and forth with Roman Reigns without any kind of real difficulty. Plus, he managed to land on his feet with no real problem while attempting his Phoenix Splash fake. So I think Seth's okay.
All right, fair enough. I mean, yeah, the action between Hot and Heavy Fast and Furious, I did think there was a low point, but at the same time, this match was almost double the length of the next Orange match. So, this one falling just a shade under Heavy, which is incredibly long. I think the longest match since AJ&T at WrestleMania.
You gotta think, the entrances for this match started at like 3 or 4 after 10 o'clock Eastern Time.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of that. I may have actually said in our Snapchat that I figured the match was going to be 3 minutes and included the entrances. And I wasn't exactly wrong. Kind of got their moment to shine, and pretty much everybody got their finisher except Seth. I think Seth may have been the only one that actually didn't get a finisher.
Yeah, he teased the V trigger, but he never actually hit it.
I think he teased everything. I think he teased the blackout. I think he teased the knee. I think he teased the pedigree. Roman hit the spear with the Superman punch. Balor hit the coup de grace. Sister Abigail, I believe, was hit.
Seth Rollins.
Yeah. And Samoa Joe ends up picking up the win with the actual Lupita punch. Do you see anything in Joe hitting it on Finn Balor? Or is it just right place, right time?
I was a little disappointed that Balor ate the fall. I figured based on based on the seal of approval from Paul Heyman that kind of established that Balor was going to be one of the guys that Brock would be facing down the road, but obviously they have other ideas. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen between in a Samoa Joe Brock Lesnar match, though. Because it's established that Brock's not really somebody that likes getting hit a lot, and Joe throws a lot of strikes.
Brock's UFC career could tell you that.
Yeah, well, you know.
I feel bad for Samoa Joe.
Why is that?
Why the hell do you think? You know, they're putting a lot behind him. And, you know, it's clear that, you know, despite the fact that he is somewhat of an advanced age, but, you know, they squeeze some skin and still, Joe puts on a hell of a match. I'll put money down that Brock and Joe is 3 minutes or less.
Sell completely. Guarantee you that match is going at least 10.
No way. Brock can't do 10 anymore. And for Joe to get 10 out of Brock after barely going 5 with Goldberg in a complete finisher bust. So
okay, to be fair with Goldberg can't work more than 5 minutes these days, and you and I both know that. Samoa Joe can still go with the best of them despite the fact that he's pushing 40.
Can Brock go with him?
100%.
I can't believe I'm about to say this. Can Brock get Joe up for a German suplex?
Oh, for sure. We've seen Brock German suplex Big Show.
I worry about the match now.
Not to mention, Patrick, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but...
What?
It's a lock!
Oh, well, yeah, I know that. I don't see the match going long. I don't see Joe getting very much offense because of what you said either. So
that's
kind of sucks of, you know, how you had the match that he had tonight, where he was able to pull the spear through the guardrail into Brock Lesnar, where I'll still stick to my guns and say that match goes maybe 3 minutes.
I will say that I agree with you that I worry about how much offense he'll get in against Brock. That being said, though, I still think that it is still my opinion, I stand by it, that the match will probably go about 10 minutes.
All right, fair enough. Any final thoughts on the match? Your rating?
I'm going to put... I know we don't like to do quarter stars here, so I'm going to go with 4 stars, because if we did do quarters, I'd probably go around 4.25. I don't think it was quite 4.5, but I think it was better than just 4, but since we don't do quarter stars, I'm going to round down to 4 even. I really enjoyed it for what it was. I think it lived up to the hype. I think it lived up to expectations, and while I find the winner curious, I can't say that I'm not interested as far as the match that it'll lead to.
If I didn't find myself a little bit bored at the halfway, or, you know, around the halfway point of the match, I would go 4.5 on that. But because it kind of had that little bit of about halfway through, yeah, I'm going to go with a 4. This was still a great match, and obviously, as you can tell, we're going to have to talk after, because you're going to give away our big finish as well. So our best and our worst match is going to be best one, this one, and worst one, the Women's Championship match.
I don't think there's any question that best and worst matches have already been discussed in their entirety, because one match stood out for its awesomeness and one match stood out for its ineptness, and we went into full detail on both of them.
Yeah.
I would like to give an honorable mention for Match of the Night to Kalisto and Apollo Crews, though. I think those two deserve it because they put on one hell of a performance.
And I would probably give an honorable mention to the Tag Team Top Match. While I found the ending a little bit odd, especially like look at the four that are in it, it was a hell of a match. You know, congrats to the new champs, but that was a hell of a match. All right, so since we kind of gave away our big finish, let me ask you this real quick. I want to ask you two questions. My first question is, this pay-per-view or Backlash for this month?
Are you asking me who wore it better? Trademark Brian Zane?
No, I'm asking you which show was better because I don't want to be sued.
Jerk. Okay. A, this show doesn't compare to Backlash. It compares to Money in the Bank, so we can't make. I don't think we can make that comparison.
Oh, crap. It is June.
Yeah, Backlash's opponent was Payback, and I think we both agree that that one went to SmackDown.
It also ruins my second question.
But I do think that Raw is going to give Money in the Bank something to contend with tonight. I think the women's match at Money in the Bank will be a lot better than the women's match here. But I think that the main event here is going to be at least as good, if not better, than the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match. And I say that as somebody who is a fan of all six people in the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match.
I got one for you. Given the stakes in the other match, which five-person match do you think will be better?
Oh, between this one and the women's one?
I can't even think of how to word it.
The one tonight. Honestly, and pardon the phraseology, Sean can get mad at me later. He can censor me here, whatever. I don't care. Frankly, I think the SmackDown Women's Money in the Bank match is going to be a complete and total clusterfuck.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. At the same time, so salvage last year.
I actually think the women's Hell in a Cell match last year was pretty good until the finish got screwed up because that table didn't break, but neither here nor there. All right, you ready to get into final ratings? That way we can get off the air.
By the way, one final thought is a nice quick thought. Women's Hell in a Cell last year, women's Money at the Bank this year, we have a best 2 out of 3 falls match, and the winning brand is whoever wins the Women's Royal Rumble in 2018. That's my final thought on that. But we'll talk more about the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match in 2 weeks. Money in the Bank.
So, and here's why. Because I think the women's Rumble should be both brands, similar to how the men's Rumble is, where the winner gets the title shot at WrestleMania.
Did you not listen to what the hell I just said?
No, I did not.
Obviously. You said Raw had the Hell in a Cell. SmackDown has Money in the Bank. You said call it a best 2 out of 3 falls match. The winning brand is whoever wins the Royal Rumble next year.
Oh, okay, I got you now.
Anyway, before we get out of here, since, like we said, we kind of gave away our big finish, so in both cases, best match would be the main event. Possibly one of the better matches of the year for me. For worst match, the Vince Russo special, the Kendo Stick on a Pole wins title match. So before we get out of here, what is your final rating for Extreme Rules, the one that year the WWE was going to be PG-13?
Goes PG-13, huh? Anyway.
I'm trying to give them this one. Leave me alone.
The highs are really high. The cage match is very good. The main event is one of the better main events all year. Arguably the best pay-per-view main event all year. Would you argue that?
I'd have to think about all of them because I didn't think the chamber match was that bad.
I think the chamber match was good, but I still think this one was better.
I would say, in terms of match quality itself, yes. In terms of match quality, experience, stakes, and everything around it, second best.
Behind the Elimination Chamber match?
No. While the match quality wasn't that good, Undertaker's last ride. Being there probably lends me a bias, but Undertaker's last ride. That was
being
that's the most emotional one for me so far this year.
Being there lends you a serious bias?
Anyway, I still gave it to this one, though.
Regardless. All right. The highs were really high. The unfortunate side effect, though, is that the lows were pretty low. And arguably the worst women's title match on pay-per-view this year. We've come to expect great things from the women's division. We got nothing of the sort in this particular instance, and I was incredibly disappointed. So I'm going to go with a round probably what I gave, similar to what I gave Backlash. I'm going to give tonight's Extreme Rules pay-per-view a 7. Patrick, how about you? What did you score tonight's pay-per-view?
If you take out the women's title match, this could be like an 8.5 show. I thought everything else delivered, yes, including Jackass winning the first match and winning the Intercontinental title, but that match still delivered. For some reason, Dean Ambrose gave a crap tonight. Steel cage match delivered. The cruiserweights, while the crowd, you know, didn't care, but that match delivered. Main event more than delivered. You know, even Elias Samson delivered. I would give it an 8.5, but boy, that women's title match. Like, that's one that's a show killer right there. Because Bayley can go, Alexa, maybe not great, but she can go. You know, I can understand wanting to get Bayley out of the title picture, but geez, good morning, she. So that dragged it down by at least a point, and I think it was nice and only a point. So I'm giving it a 7.5. I thought the rest of the show was really, really good. But my God, that Raw Women's Title match was horrendous. So, yeah, we largely agree yet again.
I mean, it's not entirely surprising. It's not exactly going to be a very divisive show. There's a lot to like. There's some to dislike. And then there are those that will hate on the WWE product no matter what they sell us and give it a 2.
Yeah, those were the people that were complaining when Jinder was unhindered. Anyway, moving on. So,
speaking of unhindering Jinder, the next time Woo reacts will be in 2 weeks as we present the 2017 edition of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. This is traditionally one of the better pay-per-views on the WWE calendar every year. It's a single brand pay-per-view this year, which may hurt it, but 3 matches stand out already. The first ever Women's Money in the Bank match, The New Day returns to the ring to challenge the Usos for the SmackDown tag titles, and 6 of the best in the sport right now, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Shinsuke Nakamura, Dolph Ziggler, AJ Styles battle for the SmackDown Money in the Bank title contract. In addition, Orton gets his title rematch against Jinder Mahal, and much more when WooRex comes back June 18th. For Money in the Bank 2017.
And then, well, 5 weeks from now will be the next Raw pay-per-view. However, I will not be here most likely. So my next Raw pay-per-view won't be until SummerSlam in August. that happens to fall on the exact night of Shimmer, we're still trying to. It's possible that an after party can be at a place where the pay-per-view is showing, but if not, yeah, I'm not going to be watching WWE.
Great Balls of Fire.
However, that's 5 weeks from tonight. 1 week from tonight, though, we will be back to help celebrate the, well, actually, now that I think about it, an actual one night of the year for the WWE. Went extreme.
I want to chime in here. Technically speaking, there is a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for here, symbolism in us doing this show right after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Because if you recall, in 2008, the WWE was still running the One Night Stand pay-per-view concept, but they called it One Night Stand Extreme Rules. The One Night Stand pay-per-view became the Extreme Rules pay-per-view.
However, next week, we will go back to the night where it all started, the night that ECW was reborn, kind of, off of the heels of the extremely popular, and a review we have to do at some point in the future, to me, it is still one of the greatest DVDs of all time, the rise and fall of ECW. WWE kind of presents WWE Uncensored, a.k.a. ECW, One Night Stand from the infamous Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City with the main event of Sandman and Johnny Dreamer facing off against the Dummies. And you also have to deal with that year's brand split, as from the looks of it, Raw and SmackDown are not very happy that this meeting was happening. Wouldn't you know it? Kurt Angle got the show too.
And one of the best segments in Raw history leads into this pay-per-view. It is a bonus feature on the DVD. It is unfortunately not included with the network copy of the show, but you can go back and watch the Raw on the network and listen to and watch the segment that we're going to discuss next week here on the show. Tonight's episode of Woo
React. Something else that we're going to have to discuss, and that's a certain one time only, the only time this has ever happened, alternate commentary on a show. The problem is, the person that does it, well, people want him fired right now, and we can kind of understand why.
Well, I'm going to be watching the network version of the pay-per-view, so I won't have that access.
Oh, great. So I get to watch the DVD by myself?
Yeah, I have a pay-per-view copy of the show on DVD, which means everything that I would have is uncensored. And there is no John Bradshaw Layfield bonus track.
I'm still going to YouTube for a certain part of the show.
Anyways, we cover ECW's One Night Stand 2005 next week here on Wrestling Unwrapped. The written reviews are back, kind of. Royal Rumble 1992 has been released. ECW, well, how's that for some symbolism? Guilty as charged from, I wonder where this show was at, Patrick.
I would say that it was at the Manhattan Center.
Yes, absolutely, just like most of the original Raws. Patrick is, of course, being facetious.
Well, is ECW, no, I'm not. The Hammerstein Ballroom is the Manhattan Center.
Son of a bitch! Really?
Yeah.
We go back to January 7th of 2001 with our next written review. It is ECW's Guilty as Charged 2001. That will release sometime later this week on the W2Mnet.com website. We are indeed a presentation of W2Mnet.com. You can find us online at www.w2mnet.com in association with the Wrestling to the Max Radio Network. Also, we are sponsored by the Madhouse Toy Chest. stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest if you are a fan of anything wrestling related, DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines and posters, and much more. You can find it inside of the Madhouse toy chest. Again, he has DVD copies of the One Night Stand 2005 pay-per-view that we are going to cover next week here on this very show. So make sure you guys check that out. Patrick, anything else to add?
No. So I would just have to add, for Sean Garmer, our producer, and for Harry Broadhurst, I'm Patrick Kenda. What?
We're going to get show plugs in here real quick. Sean, you can listen to On Wrestling for the Max as well. Myself, I'll be back on the air tomorrow night as myself and Tony Acero have the Raw reaction. Patrick, I understand that they can listen to you on a little channel called WLGK Radio and a show called Going Broadway. Why don't you tell them about that?
That's right. Kevin Hart Gray and myself will be reviewing WWE Extreme Rules this Wednesday night at, I'll say 8:15. Live on Watch the Radio, which you can find on WLGKRadio.com. Logic with a K.
As he mentioned, for our producer, Sean Garmer, I'm Harry Broadhurst.
And I'm Patrick Hessa. Thank you yet again for joining us as we react to the 2017 edition of Extreme Rules. We'll see you back for ECW One Night Stand, the beginning of Extreme Rules, next week. You have been listening to Wu Reacts here on the W2M Network.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.